My name is Lily Tuck. My new novel is The Rest is Memory.
National Book Award winner Lily Tuck's new novel, The Rest is Memory, was inspired by a series of photographs published with an obituary for Wilhelm Brass, who, as a prisoner, took over 40,000 photographs in Auschwitz. These images of a 14-year-old girl, Cislawa Kwoka, led to Tuck's imagining of her life leading up to and including her time in Auschwitz. I recently spoke with Lily Tuck about the lesser-known history of the Nazi occupation of Poland and about writing subjects she's unfamiliar with. From KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network, this is Marginalia. I'm Beth Golay, and here's my conversation with Lily Tuck.
This, I think, is my 10th book, and I live in New York, although I was born in France, and actually English is my third language.
What are your first two?
French. I was born in France, and then we moved to South America during World War II. I'm really old, and so I learned Spanish, which unfortunately I've sort of forgotten. And then my father lived in Italy, so then I learned Italian and, of course, English. I came to the United States when I was 8 years old, and so learned English then, yeah.
Our listeners will probably recognize you as the winner of the National Book Award for The News from Paraguay. But to talk about this book, in your author's note, you explain how reading an obituary in the New York Times planted the seed for this book. Can you talk about that experience for our listeners and maybe give a brief description of the book that came out of that obituary?
Yes. I always read the obituaries, not because I'm morbid, but because I find them all very interesting. I mean, the people that I read about have led interesting lives, are in the arts, economy, physicists, whatever. So 10 years ago, I read the obituary of somebody called Wilhelm Brass. He was Polish, and he was also a prisoner at Auschwitz, but he became the official photographer for Auschwitz, and he took over 40,000 pictures of the people who entered Auschwitz, the prisoners. He obviously survived, and he managed to save some of these pictures. But in the obituary, it included three pictures of Cislawa Kwoka, who I write about, because he always took three pictures, face front, sideways, and three quarters. And when I saw those photographs, I was so moved. I mean, her face is so sort of beautiful and innocent. And so I cut out the pictures and kept them, put them in a box where I keep things that might be of interest to me later. And so when I finished my last book, I looked around for what to write about and found the photos and decided I would try and write about her, which was obviously very daunting. But again, I was very, very struck by that little face, that lost life.
So the novel is told in short sections. Many are just single paragraphs, observations by an omniscient narrator. One paragraph might give a history of a spirit made from plums, and another might be a recollection of a conversation between Cislawa and her mother. And another might explain what happened to the family cow after the family was forced off their farm and into Auschwitz. Talk to me about the craft behind writing and compiling these sections. Was it difficult to determine the order of the reveal? Because the timeline of this novel covers the 3 months that Cislawa is at Auschwitz. It does that, yes, but it is also told through memory and even foreshadowing of some of the characters.
I don't know when I began doing this, but I sort of write in anecdotes. And I find that even though they may be disparate or they might look random, I don't know, I feel that it sort of works together. And in this book, I also wanted to write about what happened to all the Poles and about how the Germans, after they imprisoned and exterminated all the Jews, went after the regular Catholic Poles, the regular civilians, because they wanted to repopulate Poland with Germans. And I don't think those are facts that people realize. I mean, they know so much about the Jews being exterminated, but not necessarily about the Poles. And actually, I mean, I'm sort of quoting numbers, but the Poles lost 6 million people during World War II. And that was a fifth of their population. And they lost more people during World War II, the Poles did, than any other European country, which is really horrifying in terms of numbers.
I want to touch a little bit about this lesser known history, because I read something you wrote. It was about reading an article in the Atlantic Monthly by Brett Anthony Johnston, who was at the time director of the creative writing program at Harvard, and he's now director of the Michener Center for Writers at the University of Texas at Austin. Anyway, in the article, he wrote that he always advises students to write about what they don't know, and you agreed with him. What didn't you know about this story that will always stick with you?
Well, I didn't know anything about the extermination of the Poles. And again, back to writing about what one doesn't know, I agree with that completely, because I think if I write what I know, I think it's what everybody else knows. And I also like learning something new when I write. Like, for instance, I knew nothing about Paraguay. And one novel I wrote about a physicist, and I knew nothing about physics before, but now I love physics and wish I'd become a physicist instead of a writer, but never mind that. I think it's important to, it's not a question of wanting to teach the reader, but I think I want to write something that the reader might not know. Yeah.
Can you talk a bit about weaving fact with fiction? On the copyright page, you make it clear that this is a work of historical fiction and that other than well-known actual people, events, and locales, which were footnoted with citations, this work comes from your imagination. In imagining Sislawa's story, did the narrative come easily to you?
Yes, I wanted to stay very, very respectful. I didn't want to give her a sort of strange life or a romantic life, although it starts out with her riding on the back of a boy's motorcycle and sort of having a crush on him. But that's just in passing. And I just wanted to sort of emphasize the dailiness of her life. I mean, I'm not a farmer. I've never been to Poland, but I can imagine, you know, I have a friend who has chickens, and so I use that a little bit. And I can imagine what her life is like. I think most people can do that. Yeah.
The title of this book comes from the poem Nostos by Louise Gluck, and the final two lines of the poem make up the epigraph of the novel. We look at the world once in childhood, the rest is memory. Talk to me about Nostos and why this line, the rest is memory, spoke to you.
Well, I love the poem, and I love Louise Gluck's work, and I just thought this book is kind of a memorial to somebody's life, so I think that's where the title came from.
The book is set primarily in 1943. On one hand, this feels like it was so long ago, but on the other, it feels very recent. Does it feel timely to you?
I don't know. I mean, there's so much chaos in the world as we speak. It's hard to make comparisons, but I think we're always terrified of dictators and violence, and it all seems like it could all happen again, perhaps.
What do you want readers to take away from the book?
I think just mainly to learn about the situation of the Poles, because I think the Poles have been maligned in terms of how they reacted to the Jews being exterminated at the beginning, and also later when they came back. So I wanted to dignify their lives a little bit and show that they too were victims.
Well, the book is The Rest is Memory. Lily Tuck, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much.
That was Lily Tuck, author of the book, The Rest is Memory, which was published by LiveRight. Marginalia was produced at KMUW Wichita and is part of the NPR Podcast Network. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editors are Luann Stevens and Haley Krausen. Our producers are Haley Krausen and Katie Lanning, and our marketing coordinator is Carly Cooper. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.
We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.